Hey, everybody. Today's guest is Zach Barnett, lead vocalist and guitarist for the Boston, Massachusetts rock band American Authors. Together, we break down the writing, recording, and inspiration behind the smash hit single, Best Day of My Life, taken from their 2014 debut album, Oh, What a Life. Zach is beyond humble and his honesty refreshing. He admits that it was a struggle as a young songwriter to digest the thought of working with outside songwriters or producers, but over time has realized the gift that producer Shep Goodman brought to the table. Shep heard an idea Zach had, this idea being the monster that it eventually blossomed into, and kept on him about making the pre-chorus the hook, which is now the actual chorus of the song. Best Day of My Life was originally the B-side to their first single, and out of nowhere, took on a life all its own, and became arguably one of the biggest songs of the 2010s. So sit back, relax, because we're about to have the best day of our lives.
Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista makes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista makes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista makes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista makes a podcast.
All right, Zach. So I've been wondering about something. The lead single from your third self-titled EP in 2013 was Best Day of My Life. And it was then, from what I understand, those EPs were kind of like rolled into your debut album, Oh, What a Life, in 2014. But I noticed that it was the second single from the debut album. How did that transpire? That's a little strange.
Yeah, so American Authors actually got signed off of our song Believer. Primarily what we got signed off of at the time, because we had the song Believer. It wasn't even finished yet, but we sent it to Alt Nation at Sirius XM. And they were like, we love this. We're going to start playing it. So you better finish it. We're going to start playing it in like a week or two. So we quickly had to finish up Believer. And, you know, back then it was iTunes. So everyone was heavily buying singles. So really just like our producer's recommendation was, we should just do a B-side, because if we're going to upload Believer to go to iTunes, just to hopefully be sold from being played on Alt Nation, we need another song, just because more people are likely to buy two songs versus one. And the only other song we kind of had that was in that same wheelhouse was Best Day of My Life. So we released those two songs to iTunes as Believer was taking off on alternative radio. And pretty quickly along the way, Best Day of My Life started getting picked up for commercials. So again, like at this time, it was like, you know, alternative radio meant way more than like, oh, cool, you have a song in a commercial. Like for us, we had never experienced like that kind of a paycheck coming in from music, which was really cool. But
yeah,
it didn't necessarily mean like hit song potential. So
or longevity.
Or longevity. Yeah, you just got like one commercial and it's like, whatever. Yeah. It's kind of cheesy, but it, you know, it's a great paycheck. So it just snowballed, though, like, in the TV commercial world where, like, it got one commercial, then, like, the next week it got another one, then, like, a month later it had, like, two more. And then what we started noticing is while Believer was then, like, top 20 at alternative radio, and keep in mind, like, so we had now been signed to Island Records, kind of off of all of this, but mainly Believer. Now Believer is, like, top 20 at alt radio. But Best Day of My Life, which was the B-side, was completely outselling it. And like, like in an insane way. And we were all like, how is the B-side outselling this song that's, you know, doing pretty well at radio? And then we realized it was all the commercials. It probably had like 5 to 10 commercials at this point. We were like, okay, you know what? Pull the plug on Believer. Full gasoline on Best Day of My Life and like switched formats and whatever. And that was kind of it, man.
Right. And did you guys know the monster that you had on your hand when you heard this song back before it was ever released? Did you guys realize that you had something, I mean, really special? This song crosses genres, demographics. It's like a worldly song. Did you know?
Not really. You know, I would say like when we first kind of like, when we were working on it, when we were finishing it up in the studio, it felt a little strange, but people around us were really into it. You know, all of our friends around us were like, this is awesome. And we were like, okay, cool. Well, you know, it's got a commercial. So I guess by the time it, like I said, it did have like maybe five-ish commercials by the time the label decided to completely 180 and then just put everything behind Best Day of My Life. So
right,
at
right.
that point, it was like we could kind of see it really moving, really selling. And yeah, it was just like crushing the Hot AC charts at that point. And then it went to pop. And so yeah, we could see it kind of happening in real time. And that's when we knew like, this is awesome.
Yeah, you know, I've heard that a lot in this show, especially massive, massive songs like this, where, you know, it was just another song in the repertoire, and then maybe some of your friends heard it, or someone at the label's like, wait, maybe there's something here. And your story really reminds me of what would happen in the 70s when disc jockeys had freedom to play things, and they'd be like, they'd have the new single from whatever band. I'll use Kiss as an example. They released Detroit Rock City years ago, and the B-side was this ballad called Beth that became one of their signature songs, you know. And that's interesting how, you know, you guys were putting stock in Believer. Next thing you know, Best Day of My Life starts to blow up. And if you were to ask me a quintessential song of the 2010s, this is top five. I mean, this song is still everywhere, and I was shocked to realize that the song's 11 years old. It still feels current to me in a lot of ways. It feels like it hasn't been that long.
Dude, that's the insane thing about it. And yeah, you know, it is funny because, like, again, when we were touring off Believer at the very beginning, like, Best Day of My Life was like fourth in the set. And I will say, I think this is a funny thing because I like to look at all sorts of tests with a song and with new music and whatnot. And I will definitely say Best Day of My Life was like, yeah, song four in the set. And like, it did not crush it live. Like, it's not like when we played that song live, everyone lost their mind. Like, it was just like a random song in the set.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it wasn't till the song started popping off everywhere where it really became like this special moment live. But then now, yeah, with the life that it's had, it's really cool because it kind of is that song. I feel like one of the reasons why it feels so current today is because it keeps getting recycled in all these new places. Like, just a few months ago, we had this massive Toyota campaign, like this really funny commercial, which, like, once again, like clockwork, I'm getting hit up by all my friends. Be like, oh my gosh, that new Best Day commercial's so funny. Like, it's so good. And like, you know, it's like people hit me up all the time. They're like, oh, I'm hearing XYZ songs of yours at Target or Walmart. It's like, yeah, you just kind of like hear them, especially Best Day, you hear it kind of like everywhere you go, which I feel like really does help the song remain current.
Yeah, well, and I'll tell you, my listeners have heard me say this. It's the ebb and flow of a career. You got to be able to buckle up and wait for those times. I mean, it sounds like things are still happening on a viable level for you with this song, but a lot of bands have this one hit, okay? And it could be a massive hit. But you know what? They were maybe called a one-hit wonder, and their attendance dips a bit, but you got to ride it out because this song, I got to tell you, it may not even be as big as it ever was in 10 or 15 years from now when nostalgia really kicks in hard. You know, this
right?
This songwriting podcast that I do, it's all built on memories. I always for talk sure. about that, you know, and think of the memories this song has created. I know you hear it from the fans.
Yeah, it's very true, and I love to hear you say that because I do think about that stuff a lot, you know, because, you know, on one hand, it's like American Authors still is a relevant band. We just started our new album campaign last week. So it's like we're jumping into our fifth full length now. And it's like, so it's interesting to like look back that Best Day of My Life is 11 years old. And it's like, okay, cool. There is a part of me that does feel like, is this now one of those, I guess, dare I say, like, legacy type songs yet, but it's like, okay, I guess I probably have a little more time before I get to that level, and I am really interested to see what it's like when it gets there, because I love seeing, like, the resurgence of emo music, or, like, I'm really good friends with the guys in Lit, and it's really fun to see, like, Lit's crushing it right now on tour, you know? It's like,
I know.
They're out there just, like, killing it all the time, and it's like, okay, cool, that's, you know, because they're, like, 25 years away from when they dropped their biggest songs. And, you know, so it's like, I think that's always a really special thing to, I guess, see my friends doing, but then also to maybe just imagine and look forward to for myself down the road.
Well, I love your attitude about it. You never know. Sometimes, you know, bands will get these, especially a song that's just really out of a band's wheelhouse, something that's a novelty hit or different, and they get jaded about it. And your attitude is refreshing, because look, sometimes, you know, you got to embrace what was handed to you, you know, whether you call it the sure. hard work, the determination, the stroke of luck. The song was credited to the four members of the band, as well as producer Shep Goodman and Aaron Aketa. They were Aaron's his partner over at Dirty Canvas Productions, which yep. I understand that they are marketed as a full scale music production company focused on artist development. Again, the song was the lead single from the EP in 2013, released on the debut studio album Oh What a Life in 2014. And I'm going to ask you now, do you remember writing the song?
Oh yeah. Clear as day. I remember it.
Yeah. Did you do a demo for it?
So first of all, keep in mind, it's always important to know that American Authors, before we came up with Believer and Best Day of My Life, we wanted to be sad Coldplay so bad. Okay. So, and one of the ways that we got Believer was because we kept showing these demos to Shep and Aaron. And one day Shep goes, oh my gosh, you guys just keep showing these sad Coldplay songs. Can you please just show us something happy? And I picked up the guitar and I'm like, all right, here's a happy riff for you. And the first thing I played was the, I'm just a believer, things will get better. And then he's like, yo, that's dope. And then we kind of like went with it and morphed it into what it was. So then once we had that template for Believer, again, we're like, okay, we need a B-side. So we're showing these song ideas, and he's like, dude, these are all so sad. We need something happy. And I'm like, all right, well, this is a little different. So let me show it to you. Just hear it out. And a friend of mine, keep in mind, this was a while ago, and a friend of mine had just showed me this new band he signed called Florida Georgia Line. And I'd like never really listened to country music before, and I was like, yo, this is so cool. I was like obsessed with it. So kind of the night before we went into the studio, I was kind of messing around with, like, I don't know, writing these like Florida Georgia Line ripoff ideas. And so I played The Room, one of these ideas I had. And the pre-chorus, I even sang it with like a fake bad country accent, right? And the pre-chorus was actually the what is now the chorus of Best Day of My Life, right? So the pre-chorus of that little fake country thing went, and I said, who, everybody gonna bend them my life? And it was kind of like that. And after I played the song, Shep goes, you know, the best part of that song was the pre-chorus. We should actually work on that. Sing that back. And the next time I sang it back, I sang like, ooh, this is gonna be the best day of my life. And he goes, did you say best day of my life? And I'm like, I don't know. And he's like, that's really cool. Let's keep that. And then from there, we like built off of that idea. Kind of, we had the structure of Believer that we wanted to put into another song. So we just built it up from there. I remember the bridge of Best Day of My Life was originally the verse idea that I had.
Oh, wow.
And that's, we, you know, so the verses we were messing around with, the I hear it calling outside my window. We were messing around with that melody, but it just felt maybe like too epic. So then we made the verses what they are now. And kind of when it came time for a bridge, we were like, hey, what about the old verse? Let's throw that back in. And yeah, it was a great collaborative effort, man. And kind of just stemmed from picking and pulling from all these different pieces and inspirations that was going on in that time period.
I love that. You know, here you had this great idea, and there was so much more to your great idea, but it needed to be lifted out of you, pulled out of you. And it sounds like Shep did that. I love when I hear stories like that, because, you know, I don't care how good of a songwriter anybody is. You know, sometimes this song's perfect as is. You get demo-itis, as we call it, and you hand it off to one of the guys in your band. You're like, I don't know, I think the chorus should be this. You're like, what? You know, and it sounds like this was the perfect storm with Shep. Before we hop into the song, is that a picture of Jimi Hendrix right behind you? It's a little blurry.
Dude, you know what this is? This is your podcast app's background.
What?
Yeah.
Behind you?
It looks good, right?
It looks like Jimi Hendrix from here. It's really blurry.
I'm a Decepticon over here. You don't know where I am.
fair enough. And the reason I ask is we're going to talk about Jimi Hendrix in a little bit. Okay. You're probably like, what? Why are we going to do
you
that?
You bring up Jimi. I love Jimi Hendrix. I was raised off Jimi Hendrix. So.
We're gonna bring up some Jimi here. The song is 3 minutes and 14 seconds. We got an 8-bar intro, super catchy Tom drum part, and what sounds like a synthesizer. Sometimes when I play this back, it sounds like hand claps to me. It also sounds like foot stomps. And there's kind of like a shaker in there. There's also a lone banjo. And there's a part happening right off the top, halfway through the intro. We get the vocal hook, the woo-oo. That's the first hook in the song. It's just hook after hook. The drum tom part. That just signifies to me a party. Something about that beat, and you had talked a little bit ago about Florida Georgia Line. You know, in 2012-13, there was a lot of Americana stuff happening on the radio. And, you know, I guess this song, you know, because of the time period, could get lumped into that. But
yeah, for sure.
Nothing sounds like this song. You talk about a sad Coldplay, whatever. On this particular track, okay, there's nothing. You guys had your own sound to me. I there's nothing that sounded like it, and I think that is so awesome. This intro, it continues into the verse, and you want to talk about ebb and flow and building a song. I mean, what you put together here is magnificent. It breaks down to just that tom-filled drum part and a digital synthesizer sound, like a swoosh. Again, like hand clap with just vocals. I had a dream so big and loud. I jumped so high, I touched the clouds. And you get that whoa-oh-oh with a response from the gang vocal. I stretched my hands out to the sky. We danced with monsters through the night. And you get that whoa-oh-oh with the gang call and response. What's happening here?
So I can't take credit for those verse lyrics. The band wrote those.
Okay.
So,
what do you take from them?
So basically the idea about it, I mean, obviously we all edited it and were part of making it really come to life. It was really trying to take the imagery from the book Where the Wild Things Are.
Okay.
That was really the basic idea of what those verse lyrics were. It was trying to create that dream world. It was about trying to create kind of like that beautiful party amongst the imagery of what that book shows. And really what we were trying to encompass with this song, because again, I know I keep bringing up Believer, but again, this song has so much mirroring what that song was doing for us at the time. And what Believer did so well was it had this uber positive chorus, but we tried to make the verse lyrics a little bit of a juxtaposition, so the song had a bit more depth. So when you go back and listen to that song, it's a bit more literal, where it's just saying, I'm a little bit sheltered, I'm a little bit scared, I'm nervous, I'm going nowhere. It's talking about all these things, but then when the chorus hits, it says, I'm just a believer that things will get better.
Mm.
Right? So it's saying these kind of almost negative elements about yourself, but at the end of the day, you know that you have the promise of becoming a better person. Whereas with this song, it was painting that picture of escaping into a dream world. You know, this one was much more metaphorical with, I had a dream. So it's really just setting it up. I'm living in this dream world that I can escape and create my own best day of my life.
Okay. Well, halfway through verse number one, a distorted synth comes in along with what sounds like an electric piano. And that hand clap sound is here after the word night and after the gang, whoa, oh, oh. I don't hear any guitar up to this point. Am I correct in that?
Yeah, I don't think there is any. I don't even know if there's a piano up to that point. Like, I think it really is just like drum, the banjo riff. You get the vocals, obviously. And I feel like in that verse, it really is. The synth bass is the only instrument that comes in underneath the vocal.
Okay, because I swear I'm hearing some higher electric piano or something come in
on the second verse. There's definitely electric guitar that comes in, but the guitars don't even come in till the chorus, and they're just like football ring outs.
Yep. Okay.
Until the post chorus, but we're getting ahead of ourselves now.
Well, and you called it the post. You called it the post chorus. I like that because that's what I call it. That that part after the chorus, which is still basically the chorus, but we're gonna get to that in a second. Pre-chorus one is right off the heels of verse one. Again, I love what's happening here because the drums are still on the toms, but the groove changes. Was it hard to find what I refer to as the heartbeat of this song, the pulse, where the groove was going to be? Because my gosh, does this make a guy with two left feet, me, want to dance?
I think we really, it was important to us to try to add like an element of world music in. And I think it was pretty easy. We kind of all understood the assignment with that one. It's like, so once we had the world beat that went throughout the entire song, that was pretty easy to recognize that was the heartbeat. And that's what really brought the tempo to life with this. Because when you look at the actual tempo, like, you know, it's a pretty mid-tempo jam.
Yeah.
So I think the world beat really helps.
That's interesting. I never would have referred to it. I could see what you're talking about as a world beat. There's something classic, almost classic rock about this, but
yeah.
I don't know. I don't know how else to explain. Maybe world beat is the correct description.
I mean, it's definitely like a reggaeton, moombaton beat.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, again, it wasn't hard for us. Our drummer, Matt, he grew up in Texas. He's a Hispanic dude. He grew up playing world music and he grew up playing Latin music. So, you know, it's like he's super familiar with playing in that style. So
now it just hit me over the head like a ton of bricks. I have listeners sometimes like, I don't know what you talk about when you talk about this. And like just now, the world beat, I've listened to this song, especially the past couple of days, I don't know how many times, and it just hit me what you're talking about with that.
Right.
I wasn't hearing that. I'm hearing everything. I'm hearing the groove, but I'm hearing everything on top of it. There's so much going on here. I'm never going to look back. Whoa. Never going to give it up. No, please don't wake me now. I love this pre-chorus.
Thanks, man.
Such a great setup.
You know, obviously it's insanely simple, but again, it's just driving home the fact that you're in this dream world and that it's something that you don't want to be woken up from. Pretty much as simple as that. Just again, trying to keep this like, hey man, all this stuff is going on in the world around us today, but please don't wake me up from this amazing experience that I'm having in this dream world of mine.
I love it. Well, this part breaks down again. I mentioned the drum groove changes here. It's still on that tom, but it just changes up slightly. It's awesome. It's just drums and a shaker for pre-chorus one. After the line, give it up, there's a hand clap synth sound. It happens only once. And on the last line, no, please don't wake me now. The band stops and there's an off mic 2-3-4, and you get this inhaled breath that wasn't cut out in Pro Tools. Sometimes, sometimes we cut that noise out, and you got to hear that breath in this instance, man. It's what I had. It's what I had a producer refer to as a sexy to me one time. I went, "What? I'm not sexy. I can't even try to portray sexy." He's like, "It sounds sexy. The breath. We got to leave it in there."
You know what? Maybe Shep and Aaron would say like, oh yeah, we left it in there for this reason and that reason. It's like, I don't know. You know what? They are great vocal producers. They're great producers and vocal producers. And I can look back at those sessions where, you know, that was the most in-depth, detailed vocal takes I've ever done. But then when I listen to this song back, I'm like, oh gosh, I would change so much, especially about the vocal takes. Like,
isn't that great? Here's a song. Let me remind you if I can, Zach. It was certified 2 times platinum. I mean, number 11 on the Billboard. I mean, number 1 on the Adult Top 40. I mean, and here's the guy sang the song, wants to change his delivery.
Also, keep in mind the song's actually 6 times platinum now. And
thank you for pointing that out.
And it's going to hit 1 billion streams soon on Spotify alone. So look,
dude, yeah.
And I am over here fully being like, oh my God, how did we not tune that part in the verse? Like, Oh, sounds crazy.
You know what it sounds like to me? It sounds like the song's breathing and it's alive.
Yeah, and again, I bet Shep and Aaron would be like, we did that. That was intentional. And maybe they did. Look, maybe they did.
Well, I got to tell you something. If there was ever a time for huge stereo guitars to hit, it would have been in this chorus. I could hear it. And then now it's like a modern rock song. Okay. Yeah. Kind of pop punky. It didn't happen. There's restraint in this song. Okay. Because if I was the producer, I'd be like, okay, we got to throw the kitchen sink in here. And yeah, the chorus gets bigger, but it doesn't get out of control.
Yeah.
Wake me now.
2, 3, 4.
This is gonna be the best day of my life. My life. This is gonna be the best day of my life. My life.
The chorus comes in at the 38-second mark, chorus one, and we get right off the top on woo, woo. This is going to be the best day of my life. We get the woos after that with my life.
There it is.
That's another hook. So it's just, it's one after the other hitting you over the head. And then we get the same line again. This is going to be the best day of my life with my life. Interesting. We get the first harmonies of the song on life. There's no harmonies around that. Drums, bass, and am I hearing acoustic guitars, or are those like kind of clean ring outs you were talking about?
Maybe. I would doubt it. We were super into like, okay, add all this stuff in and then take everything out and just like try to go as minimal as possible. So maybe there's acoustics in there. I couldn't even tell you right now. I know in the chorus, it's just the football, electric guitars.
Okay.
And then in the post chorus, you get the riff, which is the big electric, the dun 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 dun.
Yeah, it's the Hendrix Lenny Kravitz overdriven fuzzy guitar.
Oh, there we go. That's where Hendrix comes in. Nice.
We're gonna talk about that in a moment. That part, it's like there's a million sounds you could have picked. I'm getting ahead of myself. We'll talk about it.
All right.
It's perfect. Again, we get the drums, the bass. We get some guitars doing chord ringouts here. The banjos in the chorus, a low growly synth. And panned off right is a swirly arpeggiated either a guitar or keyboards, man. I can't discern. I put one headphone in. I cranked it up. It's almost like a Leslie or something, or a Wurlitzer that's happening on the right side.
I mean, there definitely is an organ that you can really hear in the bridge of the song.
Uh-huh.
So my guess is it's probably that.
Hey, everybody, don't go anywhere. We got lots more with Zach Barnett coming right up after a few words from our sponsors.
Do you love to watch movies? Because I do. And if you're anything like me, you like to watch them in the theater. So Regal Unlimited just makes sense. Regal Unlimited is the all-you-can-watch movie subscription pass that pays for itself in just two visits. See any standard 2D movie, anytime, with no blackout dates or restrictions. When you want to watch a movie in a premium format like 4DX, IMAX, RPX, or ScreenX, your Regal Unlimited membership gets you into those premium experiences at a reduced cost. And with Regal Unlimited, you won't just save money on tickets. You'll also save on snacks. Members get 10% off all non-alcoholic concession items. So, if you're planning to see two movies this month, you'll need to join Regal Unlimited. Sign up now in the Regal app or on regmovies.com/unlimited. Use code DEMAKES24 to let them know we sent you.
Hey, what's up? This is Blake Weiland. I'm the host of the Tone Mob Podcast. It's a show where I interview guitar people about guitar stuff. We talk about their pedals, their amps, their accessories, their preferences, all that stuff, as well as a healthy dose of whatever comes up. Topics have ranged from aliens to addiction and anywhere in between. Oh yeah, and pizza. We're definitely going to be talking about pizza. So get the show wherever you're listening to this podcast at. Just search The Tone Mob in your search bar and it will pop right up. Come join us. We're having a lot of fun. Thanks for checking it out.
And now back to the show.
On the last line, my life that you hold out, it breaks down to just kick drum, percussion, and vocals. And then we get the post-chorus, 8 bars of an overdriven guitar lick, hook, as I call it. We get a woo-hoo hook at the top and halfway through. And there's also a flutter hand clap halfway through this post-chorus. And also halfway through, you do another, almost sounds like you were just warming up your vocal, like a woo in the booth, and it was left into the track. That's the vibe I got from it.
Probably is it.
Yeah? It's another one of those things you're like, why'd they leave that in there? Hey, it's a hit song. Stop questioning it.
Yeah, right? No, they like that kind of stuff. That stuff is fun, you know?
Awesome. Well, right out of post-chorus one, we get into verse two. Howled at the moon with friends, and then the sun came crashing in, and you get the whoa-ohs. But all the possibilities, no limits, just epiphanies, and you get the whoa-ohs after that. What's happening here?
Keeping that idea of friendship with the Where the Wild Things Are, you know, it's like going through life with your friends, making it through, having that party, you know, stomping through the forest, stomping through. But I think it is the idea, too, of bringing it back to the dream world, but also taking it a step into reality with the, hey, look, there's no limits here. We can take this idea that's in our dream world and bring this into real life. This is what we're creating our own best day. That's always an important idea that we like to stress with this song, is it's the idea of creating your own best day. And an important lyric is, it's a small lyric, but it's like, and I think one of the things that people have told me that they really connect with is it's not, this is the best day of my life, but it's, this is going to be. So you're not even there yet. The song is the idea that you have something to look forward to.
Yeah, it's that positive outlook, positive mental attitude. I love it. I love this, the first line. I howled at the moon with friends, and then the sun came crashing in, man.
Yeah.
You're up all night raising hell, and all of a sudden you hear the birds chirping. And it's like, uh-oh.
Yeah. And, you know, when you look at the book of, and, you know, again, when you look at Where the Wild Things Are, it is, there's such a strong element of friendship and community in that, you know, where the kids out there going through life with these monsters and with these new friends. So that's important.
Love it. Well, on the first half of verse two, it's just drums and a single piano. We can agree there's a piano there, correct?
There's a piano, yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
yeah. okay. Because I swear I heard it on the first time. Before we get to the line for the back half of verse two, but all the possibilities, there's a backwards shh cymbal that happens there. And then we get these guitar call and responses, but all the possibilities, guitar off right mimics that. No limits, just epiphanies, guitar left. And then on the whoa-oh-ohs, we also get the guitar mimicking those. These guitar call and responses are the same fuzz tone from the choruses, which I want to touch on that a little bit more.
Sure.
You could have picked anything. It could have been a high lick lead here. When I really got this under the microscope, I'm like, man, that's got like that 70s, like, you know, Big Muff fuzz, you know, guitar tone, right. Hendrix, Lenny Kravitz, like Edgar Winter Group. And I'm like, wow, why that sound for this song? It's perfect, but man, how did you come up with that?
I think it was more, you know, I think it was a spur of the moment kind of. I remember our Aaron, one of the producers, he was the one who kind of picked up that guitar and just started jamming that. But I think what was so great about that riff is it's less of like a lead riff and more of just kind of like a groove that helps the song continue to grow and build.
It, to me, it's another voice. You know, that in the post-chorus, the chorus is still going, but you're not singing. That's hard to achieve. And sometimes I don't even think bands or writers can achieve that. It's just something that happens. I think it just happened in this song. And, you know, kind of, again, there's so much with hit songs. There's a little bit of everything, but and a lot of luck.
Right. Yeah. And the lyrics are really busy. Like, when you really look at it, there's a lot of lyrics going on. There's a lot of vocal hooks going on. So it's like, if you had that lead riff coming in underneath the vocals, it could have taken away or distracted. Where I think the low riff just helps it groove and you know, kind of gives a good little home base pad cushion for the vocals to continue doing the thing.
And it doesn't make it sound like this big rock song all of a sudden.
Sure.
I think that's what else I like about the guitar. It's plenty loud in the mix. The tone is biting, but it's subtle in a weird way. Yeah. I don't know if I described that exactly the best way I could have. Pre-chorus 2, right off of verse 2. Drums, banjo, and single bass notes here on pre-chorus 2. Same lyrics, pretty much. I'm never going to look back. Whoa, never going to give it up. No, just don't wake me now instead of please.
Yeah, there's the difference, huh?
Yeah, reason for the lyric change there. What's up? Just did it happen? Sometimes words will come out of your mouth in the vocal booth.
Just a subtle change, just to keep it fresh, keep it a little different.
I love that. I always do, especially in the days of Pro Tools now, where you just copy and paste stuff, and that wasn't copy and pasted. And
no,
I don't know. I admire that. It makes it, to me, again, it makes it feel real. And I think that I can't speak for him, but if I was going to, I'd think that Shep would, he left in some of that realness, as I call it. We're not going to line the vocals up perfectly.
Yeah.
They make you cringe, but they sound great to this guy and millions of others. And I mean that with all my heart. Chorus 2.
Hold on. Before you jump into chorus 2, there's there's a huge important element in pre-chorus 2.
I already got it. Sorry, it was in my notes. I jumped ahead.
I wanted to see if you were going to bring it up.
Rarely do guys correct me. I love this, Zach.
Well,
this
I was
is great.
Waiting. You know, this is a big deal. This is like...
We have to keep this in here. Well, on the last line, you're awesome. This is great. I just got called out on my own show.
This is the music nerds in us.
Yeah.
This is where we really shine. This is the moment.
I was going to ask you to come back and break down Believer. I'm not so certain now, man. After No, Just Don't Wake Me Now in pre-chorus 2, there's a 2 count instead of 3, and we get a little giggle from somebody. Was that your drummer back on the drum mics, or what was that?
I don't know who that was. That was probably me, because I don't think we let anyone else go in the booth and cut vocals yet back then.
Well,
I'm just kidding.
I got to tell you, this part, and I never noticed it again until I got it under the microscope here, it's a little jarring, you know? And a lot of times for the second chorus, you'll make that one longer. You're trying to build intensity. This one's shorter. It's awesome. How did that come about? And what did you think about, if you remember the first time hearing it?
Again, we're all heavy musicians. You know, we met each other at Berklee College of Music.
Yeah.
We like weird stuff, weird time signatures, you know, little pieces of musicality. One of the big things that Shep and Aaron did teach me was kind of the idea of tightening songs. And, yeah, I mean, it's grown even so much from 10 years ago when we did Best Day to how I write now. It's like, okay, cool. Rather than making things longer and extending, it's like, how can we just tighten, tighten, tighten? So I think making it a 2 count rather than a 4 count was just a killer idea. And it does show the musicality, because, yeah, it is also a little jarring. And I think it surprises the listener.
Yes.
And you know what? It surprises the listener so much. To this day, the 2 count still throws off crowds. When we perform Best Day of My Life, like at like football games, and like the cheerleaders are making dances to it, like sometimes they'll change it to a 4 count because the 2 count is so awkward.
Yeah.
When we perform it like at like a school, or like if a children's choir is performing it somewhere, they all change it to a 4 count, because the 2 count is so awkward for a lot of people to like understand. It's crazy. I'm telling you, we still play shows. We just played a show, big festival last week, and it's still just the 2 count. It's like, yeah, it's still jarring. I think it's cool and normal, but
Yeah. Well, I absolutely love it. And thank you for not letting me get ahead of myself, Zach. I really do appreciate that, because that was a big part in this song. Let me tell you, you know, you talked about not adding stuff and taking stuff away. And man, I am so of that mindset, but I'm very careful. I believe you can take, you know, too much away. Here, I think Shep trimmed the fat on this song, the fat being 1 second. He took that 1 second out, and man, it makes all the difference in the world. I absolutely love love chorus two as we come into it off of that two count. Wake me now. Same lyrics and basic instrumentation as chorus one at the end. We're followed by another 8 bars of a post-chorus, getting into what is probably one of my favorite parts of the song, because now there's harmony on everything here. I hear it calling outside my window. I hear it calling outside my window. I feel it in my soul. And there's a response with soul. The stars were burning so bright. The sun was out till midnight. Say we lose control. We get another response with control. I love the sun was out till midnight. I love that lyric.
Thank you.
It's very good. Almost gives that optimism of this day is never ending. It's still light out.
Yeah, for sure. And it's, again, you know, if this is going to be the best day of my life, this is the part where you're reaching out there and you're getting that energy, you're feeling that sense of knowing that there is something big out there that's going to take you into this great moment. So that's what this bridge is accomplishing. And yeah, this bridge is awesome. Like, you know, at the time our label was like, I think for 3 albums, they called us the Bridge Band. And like after Best Day of My Life, I'm telling you, they would like go back when we would show them new songs. The main response that they would have if they had a critique, they'd be like, oh, the bridge could be better because you guys are the Bridge Band. Like, you guys are known for writing these epic bridges. And like, as time went on and music started to change, it was like, well, I don't know if bridges are like the thing anymore. Like, are people even doing that? But, you know. We are known to have epic bridges.
Well, I mean, it could be a good thing or a bad thing. It's like, you know, there's some bands, you know, that were known for their bridges but couldn't sell a concert ticket, you know? So it's interesting that, again, this part, for me, it's the harmonies. There's something about this bridge. And a lot of times the bridges are supposed to lift, and it definitely lifts here. I got to say, before we move on, you know, I'm at over... whatever, 200 episodes here on the podcast. And my mom is a musician, but she's 77 years old. And she'll ask me, like, who's your guest this week? And who's this week? Blah, blah, blah. And I started singing the hook of Best Day of My Life. And she's like, oh, of course I've heard that song, you know? Yeah. And that was so cool because, again, it goes to show you that this song, it was bigger than you. It was bigger than me. It transcended it. It got into JCPenney's. It got into the commercials, and my mom knew exactly what it was. In the bridge here, we get a marching band snare with what sounds like church bells panned off to the right, bass guitar, shakers, tambourine, and I believe I'm hearing timpanis in there as well.
Yeah, you're hearing all that. I mean, you know, when we were building what American Authors is today at that time, it was really about percussion. You know, again, the world beat, but also bringing in all these fun percussion elements to kind of build the songs. We felt like that was a lot of the times more important than adding in tons of crazy tonal chordal instruments, just because, you know, when you have that cool percussion, it really brings like a new sense of energy to a song rather than a piano or a guitar.
You also, from percussion, you get overtones. That you can't even describe. And I never knew what I just described. I never really knew what it was about until I started getting mixes back from my band when we would have people come in and play percussion. I'd be like,
yeah,
What is that high-pitched, that thing? It's like some delay on my vocal. It's like, no, that's the tambourine like trailing off with some delay on it. It's like,
yeah,
huh? And then they'd mute the tambourine. I wouldn't hear it again. It's like, whoa, you know? And if you get the right percussion, and it sounds like, you know, you built your sound from what you were just saying, kind of off that. Yeah, there's not crazy instrumentation here. It's more percussive. Again, mention the harmonies are all over this part. Pretty much the only harmonies in the song besides Life. We get those call and responses on Soul and on Control. And after this part, it's followed by an 8-bar reintro with just drums and banjo. The tambourine sounds like sleigh bells here. A shaker is present, and we get that woo-woo halfway through to set us up for chorus number 3. And there is a break here. We get the 4 count again, but it's just the banjo, the lone banjo this time that happens there. Whose idea was that?
Just keeping the song fresh and just moving along, you know? I think once you're at this part, it's like, actually, you know what? I won't jump ahead, but there is one part at the end that was a big conscious decision, which I'm stoked on. But these kinds of things, it's just like, what have we not done yet? We've done the count. We've done the 2 count. Now let's just let that banjo ring out here. Let it be simple and really bring it down as much as we can until it hits into that last chorus.
The other thing I love about this song that I really haven't discussed is where the woo-oos are. They don't step on the lead vocal at all. They, you know, there's a little bit of a rub on the back half. Woo-oo, my life. But you're just holding out life there. It's not stepping on it. That is genius. The woo-oos are all over chorus 3. It's a double chorus, but there's new lyrics on the back half here. It's not just a copy and paste chorus. And was that what you were kind of talking about?
That's what I was talking about. Yeah. And to me, I felt pretty stoked on that, where it's like, I love that mentality. And that is something, you know, big Shep move right there that's lasted with me to this day, where it's like, I love that. Just keep it fresh. It's like, come on, we've heard the chorus now enough. Let's just do a whole new hook. We can reuse the chorus lyrics, but let's do a different melody. Let's give the ears something fresh to catch on to.
You know what's interesting about this part, though, Zach, to me, is a lot of times it's the last chorus, you got a new part, and you're just going to reach for the sky and belt this out. This gives me the opposite feeling. It's almost like you're winding the fishing pole up. It's, you know, you're getting ready to dock the boat. It's like it's a wind-up release for the end of the song. I don't look at it as this huge triumphant part, but it's awesome. The lyric is, this is going to be, this is going to be. This is, I think you say, gotta be the third time, right?
Yes, I do.
Okay. The best day of my life. Everything is looking up. Everybody up now. This is going to be the best day of my life. And you get that my life after that. I mean, talk about ending a song, though, with a more positive lyric. Everything is looking up. Everybody up now. That guitar hook, when that vocal comes in, is running continuously now on the back half here of chorus 3. And the vocal also kind of gives credence to what I was talking about a moment ago. It sounds like it's processed a little different. It's a little distant. It's not this huge, big vocal. It's a new part. It's a new part. I think the way that this was mixed in, the delivery, how you sang it, I think it's genius.
Dude, thank you. Yeah, I mean, again, I think it's just like keeping everything simple. It was also a big deal for us to try to keep everything super alternative rock at the time as well. And that's kind of one of the reasons, like, alternative was like making this comeback at the time, where it was like kind of being reintroduced to like pop radio and pop listeners, which was really exciting. But like, for what we were falling into, in these beginning stages, like, we didn't want to put in ad-libs. We tried to not sing with too much vibrato. We tried to, like, not add in a ton of harmonies on stuff because we wanted to make sure that, like, it felt cool and organic and rock and not, like, over-the-top, musically triumphant and... I guess, for lack of better words, like, we didn't want it to be too musical. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the idea with, like, cool, rather than doing, like, last chorus ad-libs on the vocal or whatever, let's just do a whole new part that kind of riffs off the main chorus. So it's like you're still giving the ears something fresh to listen to, but it's kind of in, like, a cool, new, hip way.
Well, you may have strived to not make it so musical, but it's one of the most musical songs I probably ever heard. It's
yeah, right.
It's just hook after hook, man. It is so awesome. From songwriter to songwriter, a guy that's been doing this for a while. Congratulations.
Thank you.
That I've had on this show that gets to these heights, I always take the time out and say congrats. You know,
there's only
so many spots at radio and Spotify and life, only so many spots for hit singles, and you guys grabbed one of them. I think that is really cool. Since the release of this record, you've released the albums What We Live For in 2016, Seasons in 2019, and Best Night of My Life in 2023. And what would you like to leave listeners with here before we break?
Man, well, like I said, we just jumped into our next album cycle. So we just released our first single the other week. It's called My Last Dime. It's from our next album, which is entitled Call Your Mother. And yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I love it.
So yeah, My Last Dime is out now. It's super fun. It's a really truthful, honest song about really reacting to the times that we're living in now, but kind of trying to have a positive outlook and trying to, you know, for lack of better words, grab life by the balls and live this moment till you can't anymore. And also, you know, just going back to talk about Best Day of My Life, one of the big things that I will say with this song is, like, I think if you're an artist, if you're out there, if you're pursuing a dream, for us, we never really intended to write this kind of a song before. So Best Day of My Life took a lot of things out of us that were really uncomfortable and new to us. For example, the idea of fully co-writing with Shep and Aaron, who were not part of our bands, who we did not know. That was new.
Yeah.
Trying to write something positive and fun and upbeat versus, like I was saying, a slow Coldplay jam. It's like, that was new and fresh to us. But it was about saying yes, trying new things. And I think, again, to recognize today that it is such a small chance that you're, one, ever gonna have a career in music or arts, or, like, it's just tough out there. And I think it is, like, if you have that moment, if you get a little bit of fire on a song, if you can get a song like Best Day of My Life, it's like, always remember to be grateful and thankful for that. And do not take that for granted, because, like, man, that just does not come around every day.
Man, thank you for saying that. Thanks for your humbleness and honesty. And that is so refreshing to hear, because a lot of young bands, I've heard it on this show, I've heard it in real life talking to friends. They weren't comfortable working with the producer. They weren't comfortable having someone say, hey, change that. What? This is my song. You're not changing my... The fact that you were pliable enough in your mind to be able and open enough in your heart to be accepting of this, what I consider a gift.
Yeah.
Look what it did.
Yeah, for sure. And look, I give major props to people. I give major props who go out there with an idea and they nail it, right? And it's like, cool, that's my vision of my art and I nailed it and boom, it takes off. Like, man, I wish that's how my life went, but it didn't. And what am I supposed to do? I wouldn't be in this position talking with you today about this song if it wasn't for me saying yes, trying new things, getting into maybe a slightly uncomfortable position with my art and my songwriting. But at the end of the day, it's like it not only gave me something that I'm so stoked about and that was so life-changing to me, but it's also, it's bigger than that, where it allowed all of us to create this song that's done more for other people's lives than it probably has us in the band. And that's, like, the true gift at the end of the day. And the fact that maybe you have people who have done that and they don't want to accept it, or they want to live life upset at that song. It's like, dude, come on. this song, like, I know the effect of Best Day of My Life. Mm-hmm. This song has had positive effects on tons of people, and they tell me that, like, every day on social media and whatever. It's like, we get emails.
How many people use this as their wedding song?
Tons. Everyone.
I can imagine.
Everyone. I have friends, like, yeah. I have new friends, and they're like, oh, yeah, that was the wedding song at my first marriage.
That's awesome.
It's like,
man.
You know.
Yeah.
Something inside your heart that grows. Oh, if time is money, but money ain't time. I'll spin the wheel, I'll roll the dice, I'll spend my life like I'm on my last dime. Like I'm on my last dime.
Hey, everybody. The song you're hearing right now is My Last Dime. It's the new American Author single that Zach just mentioned. So go check it out wherever you listen to music. And don't go anywhere. We got the rap segment coming up. I got lots to talk to Chris about this episode after a few words from our sponsors.
Hello, everybody. I'm Bruce.
And I'm Nolan. And this is the Corner of Gray Street Podcast. As longtime Dave Matthews Band fans, we set out to create a podcast to dive deep into the past, present, and future of DMB.
Not only do we recap and review shows within an ongoing tour, but we revisit past shows from throughout the band's history, conduct interviews with a wide variety of guests with ties to DMB, and create unique and exclusive content like our Concerts on the Corner series.
Whether you're a fan of the band, or just a fan of great music, we think you'll find something you'll enjoy. We can't wait to see you on the Corner of Gray Street.
Hey everybody, Satan here. I know what you're thinking. Jesus Christ, Satan has a podcast now too? No, that's not it. But I am here to tell you about a podcast. And it's one that's all about my favorite band, Punchline. Not the band you expected me to say, right? You probably figured I'd like Slayer, or maybe some backwards Beatles records or something. Those are okay. But you usually find me rocking out to fan-favorite Punchline albums like Action or Lion while I'm torturing dead people for all of eternity. Punchline's podcast is called A Band Called Punchline, and it's super entertaining to listen to this documentary-style look back at the 25 years of my favorite band. Honestly, I'm really feeling like I'm getting to know these guys, and their story is amazing. I'm so ready for them to get down here. I have so many questions. I gotta give them credit for catching on to my whole 37 thing, too. There's a reason why they're my favorite band, and if you listen to their podcast, they might become yours, too. A Band Called Punchline is available wherever you listen to podcasts. Check it out, and I'll see you all in hell.
As we near the end of the show, here's a band you might not know.
Welcome to this week's Band You Might Not Know. If you'd like your band to be considered for Krista Makes a Podcast, email your best song via MP3 only. And a short bio to bandyoumightnotknow@gmail.com. This week's featured artist is Loose Choir, a brand new band from Sacramento, California. They have an upcoming full-length coming out on Transylvania Records Protagonist Music this summer. Here's a snippet of their song, Sun on Sea.
Chris and Chris.
So, Chris, I think it's pretty cool that sometimes we get to talk about some of the biggest songs of entire decades. I would argue that Best Day of My Life is probably one of the biggest songs of the 2010s. And it's really funny hearing Zach talk about what he would change with the vocal takes in one of the songs that was one of the biggest songs of the decades. Isn't that just the artist way?
Oh my gosh, I've read autobiographies with Elton John and you know, like huge stars that like, oh, I was suffering from a cold when, yeah, I recorded Rocket Man. I could have done the vocal better. It's like, what? What are you talking about? You know, I think that's the artist never being satisfied. I get it.
Right. Hey, it was really cool for me, Chris, and I told Zach this after the conversation was over, but I recorded an album, Punchline recorded an album back in 2005 with Shep Goodman, with this producer. So when he's telling stories about Shep, I'm like, man, I picture his voice and his mannerisms exactly. And I thought it was really cool to hear how Shep recognized the hit within the idea that Zach presented. He pulled out the, did you just say Best Day of My Life? As something cool in the song and like extracted it and helped it become the hit that it is.
Yeah. And I mean, by his own admittance, I mean, he was just like, yeah, you know, it was weird being young. It was weird having someone come at you with this advice. And what I think is even more strange is how receptive they were. And I don't know, it's easy to be receptive after the fact when you've had a massive, massive hit, but they didn't know what they had on their hands. That's why I'd asked him, did you know? And it's kind of like, eh. You know, we knew there was something there, but it was just kind of another song on the album.
It was the B-side of the song they thought was the hit.
Yeah.
I loved in this one hearing what a collaborative effort this was. I mean, a lot of times on this show, we're talking about a song where the person you're talking to pretty much wrote the whole song. But in this instance, he's talking about all the members of the band collaborating to write the lyrics, to bring the song to life. I love hearing about that. I think great stuff comes out of a collaborative effort.
It does. Although on the same token, you can also have, you know, too many cooks in the kitchen. It can end up spoiling something. I've seen that many times with songs. It's like, yeah, this is a big grandiose song, but it misses the mark a little bit. It went south somewhere, and that didn't happen here. This it's amazing how, again, the artist, you know, he had said we were trying to make something that wasn't too musical. And I said to him, my gosh, if that's what you were going for, I think you failed, because this is one of the most musical pieces of music I've ever heard.
Right. Yeah. I mean, he brought in the world beat thing, which, like a band I've been trying to get on here because they're a Pittsburgh-based band, but Rusted Root, and that song Send Me On My Way, which same kind of thing. It's like the world music influence of that song. And yeah, you can feel that in here because you do have that Americana folky sort of feel, but combined with that what he calls world beat or world music. I mean, I think what results is, like you said, Chris, your mom knows this song and likes this song. It's a song that can appeal, yeah, to everybody from kids to people that are older people. Anybody, any age range could like the song and relate to it. Hey, Chris, what do you think? I know there's 50 of them in this song. What is the hook of this song? If you had to choose one, what is the hook? Because I have an opinion on what it is.
You know, the life is huge.
That's the one, I think.
Yeah, and to me, it's a toss-up between that and, I mean, right off the top of the song, you get that woo-oo. And
yeah,
there's something about woo-oos and ohs, and it's just, it's universal. You don't have to be a singer to do the woo-oh part. You know, you'll still try to sing it even though you're tone deaf, you know, but you're not going to sing the verses if you're tone deaf typically. Yeah, I would go with the whoa-oh-oh groove, but I could understand it being life, too. It's one of those. And arguing a third argument could be made for the guitar part that mimics everything. So catchy.
I love when you talked about the guitar part being another voice in the post-chorus. That's such a good way to put it. When a lead is effective, it should achieve that, being another voice, being another thing you can sing along to.
Mm-hmm. But it doesn't, it wasn't too loud in the mix. It doesn't take your head off. It's just perfect. It's another part of the song. It doesn't, you know, like, look at me, I'm the lead guitar player all of a sudden. It doesn't give that vibe. You know, I was very careful with my words, I you know, of how to say this to Zach, but, you know, this song, you mentioned a second second ago about my mom liking it. There's certain songs that are worldly in the sense that, you know, I'll just use one as an example. I just called to say I love you. Like, yeah, you might not like the song, but there's nothing offensive about it. An 80-year-old woman could listen to it, a 4-year-old could listen to it. And that's the same feeling I get with Best Day of My Life. I don't mean that as a dig. I mean that is the biggest compliment possible. It's just, it's not offensive. It's just this piece of music that just makes you want to tap your foot.
I think now more than ever, personally, when I'm writing a song, I think when I was younger, I was trying to write songs for people in our world to like. But now I think I approach songwriting, I'm trying to write a song that anybody could like. And they definitely achieved that with this song. And I told Zach this when he finished too. I thought he was a great guest. I loved hearing him talk about this song. I loved hearing him talk about music. I know our listeners can't see him. I mean, you can go to the Chris That Makes a Podcast Instagram. I'll put a few reels up. But just something about this guy, I felt like I could be really good friends with this guy. Did you feel like you were like instantly friends with this guy?
Oh, yeah. I it's just his honesty. And I told him his humbleness was very refreshing. And the fact that, you know, he knows what he has on his hands here as a hit song. Most people don't get one. And he got one, which is fantastic. I'll tell you something else is fantastic. These 5-star reviews we've been getting on Apple Podcasts. And I want you to tell everybody about it, Chris.
Yeah, that's I brought this up to Chris beforehand. I prepped him on this, but.
Come on, that was an off-the-cuff segue, Chris. Jeez.
Speaking of people I feel like I could be friends with, yes. If you like this show, one thing you could do that doesn't cost anything and it's fun to do is to go to Apple Podcasts and write us a little review. You can leave a 5-star review on Spotify as well, but I don't think you can do written ones on there. But I wanted to take a moment and read you, Chris, a couple reviews we got lately on here that I think are pretty nice.
I'd love to hear them.
For example, King Tony 23 gave us 5 stars and wrote, "Some of my favorite songwriters have been on this show, and some of my favorite songwriters de make it. Couldn't ask for much more out of a podcast, but it'd be kind of cool if you all just started about sports betting on occasion."
okay.
All right, King Tony 23, we'll try to do our best in the future. Maybe we'll talk about sports betting a little bit here and there. Katie the Killer Miloski wrote, she gave us 5 stars, and she wrote, "This podcast is truly one of my favorites. I by no means am a musical expert, but the way Chris discusses various songs with the artist truly is stellar. You'll find yourself laughing along in the car or at the airport over a lyric. Music makes the world a better place, and this podcast does too."
Very, very nice.
Yeah. And one more, Chris, I wanted to read you. This one's from Blubby Blah, huh. Who gave us 5 stars as well and said, "Such a great insight to how all these great songs are written. Very inspiring stuff here. I've learned a lot by hearing some of my favorite musicians going into detail, talking about how they came up with the ideas behind their songs."
Well, that's awesome. Thank you for sharing. And if you want to try to best those those reviews, you could head over to Apple and leave us a review. We'd really appreciate it. And maybe you can get your review read on the airwaves from Mr. Chris Fafalius.
I like this new segment of reading our reviews on here, as long as they're good.
Absolutely. And head over to ChrisToMakes.com for our supporting cast, where you get bonus episodes each week. ChrisToMakes.com for the price of, I don't know, a Gatorade at the Sheets in Pittsburgh.
There you go.
You could be supporting us over at ChrisDemakes.com. Give us a follow at ChrisDemakes, a podcast on Instagram, and give me a follow on Instagram at @LessThanChrisD. And I almost said and @LessThanChrisFafalius. And give Chris Fafalius a follow at Chris Fafalius. And I want to thank this week's guest, Zach Barnett, for sitting in the hot seat. We'll see you next week.
One Hit Thunder is a podcast where we both celebrate and have a good laugh about bands and artists that had just one hit that we all know. Each week, we're joined by a guest from the world of music or comedy to learn more than you ever thought you would about some songs that you can't forget, and we decide if they brought the One Hit Thunder or were nothing more than a one hit blunder. Look, if you listen to the show, you're probably going to laugh, and I guarantee you're going to crush next time the bar has music trivia. Tag Team, Jane Child, Meredith Brooks, Looking Glass, Sean Mullins, Eiffel 65, EMF, Crash Test Dummies, Crazy Town, Chumbawamba. We have hundreds of episodes in our back catalog and a new episode each week, so pass the Dutchie, make sure you're connected, and subscribe to One Hit Thunder wherever you get your pods.
Hey, what's up? My name's Lurk, and I'm the host of Lamb Goat's Van Flip Podcast. Every week, I have in-depth conversations with bands from all over the scene, big and small. We also like to keep our finger on the pulse and showcase up-and-coming bands on the show as well. So come check out Lamb Goat's Van Flip Podcast.
Hey, you. Do you have any plans this year? Ha! How's that going? Did you get 2020? Well, welcome to a brand new podcast called 2020, where myself, Benny Goodman, and my good friends Corey Pazin and Siobhan Cronin from the band Lost Symphony also got 2020.
And since the world ended this year, we decided why not just check in with some of our friends in the music industry and see how everyone's doing.
We're going to get a candid look at life on and off the stage, as well as the mindset of some of the most successful people in the entertainment industry.
New episodes drop every Sunday and Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern.
And you can listen at 2020-d.com, soundtalentmedia.com, or on your favorite podcast app.